Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
Survive, thrive, stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
First time joining us, I want to welcome you. We do this every Thursday night at 8 p.m., except next Thursday night, it's turkey time. Don't be tuning in. You can watch one of the reruns or one of our old ones. So I'm going to go through announcements quick. Everyone complains about my announcements, but I feel like I have to do them every time. So anyway, we are PrepperNet. PrepperNet is an organization of like-minded people. We put together, facilitate groups in your area. We have over 85 groups nationwide where we have a leader and members that come together every single week and get together. Not week, sorry, month. Some weekly. Oh, my gosh. Some of them do more than weekly. But they'll come together. You meet local people. That's the key. If you don't know local people that have like-minded, you're kind of screwed. One of the things I always say is if you're not in a group, you're going to die. And this is a way to meet people locally so you can possibly form a trust or a group, get your neighborhood involved, whatever you need to do. But that's what we're all about. PrepperNet is all about. So where do we, our meetings, if y'all can see this, there's, that's not even all of them. I haven't updated it, but there they are. I can't read them on my screen because my eyes, I need my glasses. But we're everywhere where you are. And if we're not where you are, you go to the website and you send me an email saying, hey, I would like to step up and start one in my area. Now, don't say that. Don't call me or email me if you live in, there's a town called Chicopin, North Carolina. The population there is like 78. You're not going to, no, that's too small. We need bigger cities, suburbs of cities, just where you can get more people. I'm sorry, I just can't create a meetup for 78 people in a town called Chicopin or Beulah Dean. That's in the mountains. Anyway, hey, we are listener supported. We have a you can go and join PrepperNet for free, absolutely free, or you can help out and pay $40 a year. That's it, $40 a year that helps us pay the bills. I'll tell you this, alone in meetup cost, it's over $6,000. Do the math, research it, is what we pay is for the meetup so people can meet other like-minded people. Hey, we made a big move. We have moved off Facebook. We still have a Facebook account, but we are on MeWe. We had over 3,000 people that have moved in less than a week so far. And so it's growing fast. We had to move. You guys have known about what the Facebook has been doing. I don't want to get in a lot of the politics of that, but with a good conscience, we just could not stay and do all our communications with Facebook. So we are on MeWe, and we got a huge announcement coming out December 1st that you guys will need to move to Rumble. As soon as you get Rumble to do live video streaming and get it working, I will move ASAP. They don't have it working correctly yet because we've tried it. So we're, like I said, we're here every Thursday night. Some of our past shows, just a reminder, we had Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. We had Ross Powell last week. This week, we got Jonathan Hollerman from Grid Down Consulting. He's a best-selling author. We'll talk to him in a second. Next week is Thanksgiving, Turkey Day. Then we have Prepper Princess, a YouTube sensation. This lady lives on like very little money. She's got a huge following. And she sells a lot of Sun Ovens, and I'm a little partial to Sun Oven. You guys know that. And so she is a great affiliate and a great champion for Sun Oven as well. Then we have Kyle, my podcast partner, is going to be on. With everything going on, you know he has at least 14 or 15 new conspiracy theories that he's already figured out how it works and operates, and I'm sure we'll hear all the different conspiracy theories because he is a conspiracy theory freak. And then I also want to announce, a couple announcements, and then I'm going to be finished, guys. So I've written two books, and I hope you read these. These are not to make money. If you write tiny books like this, there's two of them here. Yep. These are not to make money. These are really to get the church off their butt and start preparing and listening and obeying to God's word. And that's what these books are about. There's no bones about it. The Bible calls us to be prepared for what is coming ahead. And if you're not, you're disobedient to his word. You can be a Christ follower and you can, love and trust, but you can also be disobedient at the same time by not preparing for what he has told us has come. My first book was called The Case for Christian Preparedness. It's like $4 or something on Amazon. I don't even know if I make a dollar on it. And then my latest book is called Stand Firm to the End. And that is, it's, I don't know, $6.99. I'm not sure. It's my latest book. And I'm going to release a new book next weekend. And I'm excited about that. It's not a Christian book. Per se, it's from the class that I taught back during the beginning of the pandemic, like Intro to Preparedness. It's in a book form. It's more expensive. I'm actually hoping to make a couple of dollars on that. So we'll talk about that in the next one coming up. But tonight, I think that's it. We have an awesome guest. I read his book, The Survival Theory, and it changed my life. I did not know I had a twin on the earth, and I read this, and a lot of people don't talk exactly the way Jonathan does. And they don't speak about things, but man, when I read this, I've read this book at least three times. I know some of our cities have actually gone through the entire book like it's a workbook. Our Asheville group has done that, and maybe Toledo, but anyway. So he's written many books. He is live with us in the house, and I'm going to bring him up. Jonathan, I think you are live with me right now. How you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Good. Let me tell you about John. Jonathan is just not this fly-by-night guy that wrote a book or anything like that. He's the number one bestseller for sure. He is. That's awesome. He's also the president of Grid Down Consulting. So you consult. I do consulting, but you do consulting on a level that I can only dream about because you work with a lot of high net worth individuals. So he does that. And then he's a former SEER instructor. If you guys don't know what that is, that's like teaching people to survive, escape, evade, and eat people. I don't know. What does SEER stand for?
Survival, evasion, resistance, and escape.
Evasion. So yes, he was a former instructor in that in the military. He's also, now this is the coolest thing. He was on, I think it's make sure if I say this right, the Electromagnetic Task Force.
The Electromagnetic Defense Task Force.
Task Force. Yes. Yeah. I want to be on a task force. That just sounds like cool.
Well, they shut it down. So, basically it was making a little bit too much waves. The gentleman that organized it, General Quast, who, if you don't know who he is, search him. He's a man, talk about amazing people. He gives some amazing speeches and he sees the future. He sees what's coming. He was one of the head guys they were trying to pick for, to lead the Space Force there. But he organized that, and Major David Stockenberg. It was down at LeMay Wargaming Center, and it was basically a large wargaming operation. All the alphabet agencies were there, DOD, all the military branches, emergency defense, FEMA, all of them were there. And basically we spent 3 days wargaming the EMP threats. It went on for 2 years, and then basically it got shuffled. So EMP commission's disbanded now.
So what was that general's name again?
General Quast, Kwast. Okay. So he gave a speech recently here to the Hillsdale. Is that the college that I'm thinking of? Hillsdale?
The Hillsdale, the one that you can do like study the Constitution, all the history of America.
So yeah, he talks in there about some things that are coming down the pike with satellites and our adversaries with satellite technology and the things that they can do from space. So that's interesting. Quantum computing and, you know, quantum electromagnetic spectrum is his big domain and what he's been pushed for. But I'm sorry.
No. I just got one more. You're a senior fellow at Impact America as well. So, you've been an advocate for America in a sense when it comes to protecting our grid.
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at PrepperNet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at PrepperNet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
Yeah, I don't want to, I do sometimes get, you know, I don't want to be a one-trick pony either. There are multiple threats in survival theory. I talked about the pandemic threat. It was just a matter of time till a pandemic came. This is not the pandemic I was talking about. We are still ripe for a large-scale avian flu or something along those lines that becomes airborne. So COVID is kind of a bump in the road. I don't want to minimize it. I mean, there are people suffering and dying from COVID. So, I don't want to minimize it either. But in the scheme of what it could be right now, it could be a whole lot worse.
Right.
So, and it's still my big fear is anytime something like this happens, you would think the government would learn their lesson because, you know, I wasn't really beating the drum real hard, but there was lots of people that in my industry that were beating the drum saying, hey, we're not prepared for a flu that's right. Coming. Some of my high net worth clients have survival retreats that were from the CDC and from some of these industries saying, hey, we're not taking this seriously. We're not working on a universal flu vaccine. And there was a lot of things that they were we didn't have enough ventilators. That was another thing that they were talking about a lot. And we are where we are now because the government didn't take the threat seriously. Unfortunately, the threat to the electric grid is far, far greater and it's far more realistic. And basically all the organizations that were fighting the EMP threat fight and the solar flare and hardening the grid, they're all gone. I'm telling you right now, there's a handful that are hanging on by their fingernails, but for the most part, the electric utility companies have won.
Well, didn't Trump just sign an executive order to start another task force?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the Trump's executive order instructed DHS to do a report within a certain amount of time. So DHS did that report like 4 or 5 months late, and it just came out here a couple months ago. You can go download it. It's 13 pages of nothing burger. It literally says nothing. It says, we're going to continue to study this. So they've been kicking the can down the road. They're not taking it seriously. Part of the problem is there's a deep swamp in Washington, D.C., and the electric utility industry spends $180 million a year and on lobbying. And both sides of the aisle are basically owned at this point. There's no federal oversight over the electric utility. There's FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but there's no legislative power behind FERC. And there was a big case. If the people listening to this don't know, you need to follow a gentleman by the name of Michael Mabee, M-A-B-E-E. Michael Mabee, he runs a website. He's been going after electric utility companies for the last couple of years through the court system with Freedom of Information Act and trying to find out, it's going to blow your mind when you find out what he's found and how the electric utility industry, what's called self-regulate. So if electric utility breaks critical infrastructure standards or security protocols, if they have somebody breaks in through cyber into their network, they're required to turn themselves in, and then their own industry, NERC, which is their own lobbying, sets the same fine for them. So, so when they pay the fine, they're paying it to their own industry. It's a self-licking ice cream cone, and it relies on people turning themselves in for fines. And so Michael Mabee was going after them saying, hey, well, who's breaking these standards? Which of these big electric utility companies are breaking these standards and not protecting things the way they are? And so he was trying to go through FERC too. And essentially there was a court case and we lost. So FERC sided with NERC and they said, we don't have to release any information. And yeah, so basically we have no idea what the utility companies are up to, what kind of security they're implementing. They're not hardening the grid. We know that. That's not even a secret. So we're basically flying blind. And at this point, the American people don't have a right to know what the utility companies are doing to keep us safe, which is kind of, nuts.
So everyone needs to be a well-rounded prepper, but what's your biggest fear? Are you fearful of a nuclear bomb or an EMP, or you feel, most fear of just a solar flare? I mean, what's
all the above? So, there is a threat from a physical attack. If you take out 9 of our high voltage transformers across this country, 9 of our substations at a single time, you can take down the entire national electric grid. Cyber attacks is something that people don't talk about, but with quantum computing just around the corner and AI, our electric grid is very vulnerable to a cyber hack, and they are in the system right now. You can go and watch Admiral. He's the head of the U.S. Cyber Command. He went before Congress here years ago, warning Congress that, I mean, they have the ability. They had the ability 4 years ago, Russia, China, a lot of these countries, to flip the switch whenever they want on our lights. We're in all their networks too, right? And they're in ours. And, it's the mutually assured destruction thing. So I'm not so worried about Russia and China. I'm more worried about that falling into the hands of some terrorist organization. So you have physical, you have cyber, you have a solar flare, which we're long overdue for. The sun's starting to pick up with the sunspots and the coronal mass ejections. And there's going to be more of them in the future because it's just the rotation we're heading for. And then the EMP threat, it's mind-blowing. So sitting in that wargaming operation down there with the military and just seeing how, people think the military is going to show up and pass out MREs like the movies and feed people. 97% of the military gets its electricity from the civilian electric grid. There are DOD reports right now telling Congress, hey, if we lose the civilian electric grid, we've got backup diesel power for generation for 24 to 48 hours. Right. There's less than 2 days worth of food on a military base, right? Yeah. They're in the same boat as everybody else. They're not coming to aid anyone. The another thing that really blew my head that I didn't know when I got there was the fact that their communications rely on the civilian phone lines. So when we lose the civilian electric grid, solar flare, EMP, whatever the case, the base commander can't pick up a phone and call the Pentagon or call his higher ups and say, hey, what are we doing? There's no game plan for this. There's no plan for this in the military. I'm telling you right now, nothing's happening. The military is hardening NORAD. You've probably seen cyber. Cheyenne Mountain was hardened here years ago. They are rewriting the EMP protection standards. A lot of people don't realize that. People talk about Faraday cages and MIL standard 188-125. Well, that's from 1981 when that was written. I've interviewed both the guys that were involved with the algorithms and stuff that did it, Dr. Daskey, Dr. George Baker. There's the threat from EMP is so much worse than people understand. It's very realistic. So to answer your question, finally, the threat from EMP, okay, I don't know how to quantify it. I can't tell you it's a, you know, 20% chance over the next 3 years. Right. It's a 50% chance. I don't know how to quantify it. But when you put it together with solar flares, and then you add it to a physical tax against the grid, and then you add it to cyber attacks and quantum computing, the fact that we don't have a hardened grid is unforgivable from our government, because, yes, you know, they're not going to act until something happens. But it's too late. If somebody destroys our electric grid, we're not coming back from it. It's just not going to happen. So,
So in your book, Survival Theory, you actually have chapter 5 on your website that people can go listen to, and it talks about this very thing. So if I want to do a shock real quick, and I know you know the answer because I heard you say it, but if an EMP hits America, what does that mean to the population in America?
You're going to lose 80 to 90% of the population in the first year. And that's not fear mongering. That's not, you know, trying to hype people or, you know, freak people out. But that is just that's a fact. So we have a just-in-time food distribution network in this country that relies on interstate trucking. It relies on electricity, and it relies on 100 different computers talking to each other at any given point. So when you swipe your can of peas at the grocery store, there's a computer that takes that barcode and goes through a computer. It sends it to their grocery store distribution center, put another can of peas on the next truck. The distribution center goes to the bottling or the canning facility, put another can of beans on the next truck here. The canning facility, the computer sends a message to California. We need more raw peas on the next truck. Everything is interconnected and intertwined. If you go to a grocery store, there's no big storeroom in the back anymore. They don't even build storerooms in grocery stores really anymore when they build a grocery store, because then everything just arrives right at that moment. So my point is when that food runs out at the grocery store, that's it. Game over. There's no more trucks rolling to that grocery store. And the average people have, you know, even if you ate the uncooked stuff that you shouldn't eat, I mean, you might have a week's worth of calories, maybe 2 weeks. The average person, right? I'm not talking about preparedness-minded people, but the average Joe. So what you're going to have is a situation where there's no phone, there's no internet, the sewage starts backing up into your home because the facility is not running. You don't have any water because that runs off electricity. You don't have any heat or air. You know, winter's coming here. There's no heat. You just go down the list. Nothing works. There's no banks. There's nobody knows what's happening. So you add fear, you add a lack of information, and then you add in food, you add in stress, right? You're gonna get looting and rioting right off the bat. People are gonna be scared to go to sleep. It's gonna go downhill way faster. And that's, I think, you know, I'm no Stephen King. I'm not that great of an author, but I think that's why my books found the success they were, is my background in SEER and having starved and been really hungry, and a lot of my study into the psychology behind human desperation and starvation. In fact, I was actually asked to write a white paper for the military, which I'll be releasing as part of Survival Theory 2. But on that subject, the psychology of human desperation, starvation, you add all that stuff in, people think they're just going to work with their neighbors in that kind of scenario.
Right.
You can't trust anybody. You know, if you're in suburbia and that whole idea of let's, you know, survive on our cul-de-sac here, you know, on the outskirts of a town of 2 million people. Yeah, you might last longer than the street next to you, but
thanks for saying that, because I've been preaching that for 5 years. We have other people in this industry that don't know, and they literally preach, get your cul-de-sac, get your neighborhood to come together. And I'm like, I can't. You're an idiot. You've never studied history.
And people ask me all the time, what books do I recommend? So, I mean, the standard 1 Second After, which is, you know, a classic in the industry and everything. But if there's a number one book that every single preparedness-minded person needs to read, it's Selko Begovic's The Dark Secrets of SHTF.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So that is a guy that actually lived through a grid-down scenario in a town that was surrounded by the enemy, and they cut the power. And how the town fell apart in street fighting street, gang fighting gang, warlords grew out of that, Brothels grew out of that. They were pushing old ladies in front of them for human shields when they crossed the street. Just the level of depravity that happened in a modern city over the course of a year was...
But, Jonathan, that can never happen in America.
Right. We're different. We're evolved, right?
We're evolved.
Yeah.
We're in the Bible Belt. I mean...
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's human nature. It's survival. Exactly. It being a former SEAL instructor... You have fight or flight, you know, so you're going to have fighters. You're going to have people that try and hide, and you're not going to be able to hide from this. But nobody in this country, and I mean nobody, ever starves, right? They don't.
Right.
Nobody has experience. You know, people fasted from, you know, from the Christian faith. We fast sometimes, you know. In prayer, and you get hungry. In my SEER training, there were times where you had lots, you know, food taken away from you for long periods of time. If none of you have ever read it, you need to go read the Minnesota Starvation Experiment. That was during World War II. There were some conscientious objectors, but they still wanted to serve, so they volunteered to basically be starved for, I think it was 60 days. But here's the kicker. They were only put on half rations. They weren't starved. They didn't get no food. Oh. They were given food, I think, three times a day. And I think they were given, I think, 12. They were given half, like 1,200 calories a day, I think is what it was. They were men. And you need to read what these men went through over 60 days. I mean, a couple of them got let out of the program because they were cutting themselves. People were, you know, going nuts. And this isn't a situation where you had people in lab coats around you all day long. You knew exactly when your next meal was coming. You were hungry, but you also knew your family was safe. You could turn on the radio and listen to a baseball game. Yeah, these right. guys that were in this experiment knew the experiment was going to end. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a complete lack of unknowing what the next step is, right? So go and read the psychological, like the things that the report. That it was a big, the book's like this thick if you get the full book from the University of Minnesota. And it explains all the things that these guys experienced during that process. And it's kind of shocking because that is the thing. You talked about all the other urban preparedness, the urban prepper experts. And, you know, I'm not trying to step on toes here, but it's an oxymoron.
Right.
There's more resources in the city. Yeah, but there's 1,000 times more people in the city too. And those resources are going to be gone like that. And there's no more resources coming.
You know what?
Put a garbage bag over your head and sneak around at night, you know, and break into the – you're dead. There's houses everywhere.
I'm not trying to change God's word at all, but I use God's word to make an argument that you need to flee from the cities. You need to be out of the cities. But let me tell you, in your book, which I absolutely love, and I got to this one page and I read it, and I'm like, did he just say that? This is my brother from a different mother. You said Glock. End of story. I'm a big Glock guy, and you said Glock. But the other thing you're a Glock guy. Another thing that I like that you said that I've been, and we've talked about this before, is in every group, people are training on guns, 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 guns. That's all they do is guns.
Yep.
And that's all. But what they don't realize, the last thing you ever want to be in is a gunfight.
Gunfight.
If you're defending your retreat and your family, who's behind you? Yeah. Your family, your house, your resources. You never want to. And I read that. And I'm like, man, this guy thinks we think just alike. That you don't want to be in a gunfight. You want to be able to end a gunfight quickly. But if there's 40 people coming up to your retreat, you better have a way to get the hall tail and get into safety. And
So again, I realize there's a lot of prepper fiction authors out there that have become very popular and they built businesses out of their authorship that just come from a regular background that haven't really looked into it. And I realize that my books have violence in it too. You know, I tried to paint an accurate picture, but it's not going to be like the books. And I think a lot of people, they're like, oh, you know, I'm setting aside reality. I'm just reading this fiction. But if you read enough of the bad fiction that's giving bad ideas and bad thought processes, and I combat that with my clients all the time, you know, so I build new retreats from the ground up. I've built some pretty large survival retreats from small family units, high net worth to large groups. But a majority of Grid Dow Consulting, probably 70% of my business, is flying to existing survival retreats and doing full analysis of their survival retreats. And I've done that all over the world at this point. But the biggest issue that I see is I've got clients with $200,000 worth of guns and they've got $4,000 worth of food.
Right.
Okay? And I'm just like, I'm not telling you not to have the best weapons, and more important than that, have the best training and get professional tactical training on those weapons, the handguns, the rifles. You need to have training, and you need to have force multipliers like night vision, thermal optics, suppression. You know, if you're allowed to own it in your state, I'm not telling anybody to break the law here, but those are very important things. But if you don't have enough food to feed your family, then what's the point? You know,
and you don't want to store it in the same place. You don't want to put all your food in one little place. So if you get compromised, it's all gone. So another thing, but in the book is really good. I would say that on the book list, this is definitely top. I would say top two books in this industry that people should wear. Now, I do think One Second After, just for the fact that it brings more people to becoming preparedness mindset, because a lot of people will read that, and that brings a lot. But this one, with the information you have in there, for a fiction book, it's the best there. I mean, I've been promoting it for years.
Thank you. I know you have.
Yeah, and it's a great book. And I told you I've read it three times, and you've been telling me you're writing this other one, but I haven't seen it yet.
I'm busy.
I do want to tell everybody. I know.
I've had it 85% done for about 2.5 years now. So it's coming sooner than later. I just every time I find another chapter that I want to write. So I probably ought to split it up and just put out what I have. But
sooner than later. I do want to tell everyone that Jonathan is on a hunting trip in an undisclosed area.
Yeah, and, sorry about the set here.
Yeah, and so you actually had to drive until you actually got. Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing that Argentina has, you know, mountains that you can get high enough to get connections. So, you've written other books other than this though, and tell us real quickly about them so people can understand. You're more than a one-trick pony, for sure.
Sure. So the first book I actually wrote was called was called Equipping Modern Patriots. It's called A Story of Survival. So I wrote that, oh my goodness, it might have been 8 years ago now. So essentially I was reading a lot of EMP and prepper fiction. I was reading I'm not going to name any names. So I was reading a bunch of EMP-based prepper fiction books. And I'm reading them. I'm like, this is like, they don't get it. They don't like, I think the one book, like 5 days after the EMP, they were going to a grocery store and they were purchasing food, but you can only get $50. And there was a manager of the grocery store sitting there letting people in two at a time. And there was a policeman standing there keeping order. I'm like, what $12 grocery store employee showing up 5 days later to sell food for a store that doesn't exist for, you, it just like they didn't think it all the way through. And I've got a stack of probably 40 books, prepper fiction. And I think I've got through about three of them. So I get like four or five chapters in. I'm just like, oh my goodness. Like they just don't understand what's going to happen and the reality of the situation. So that caused me to write my book, A Story of Survival, Equipping Modern Patriots. And so I wrote that. I'm a military grunt. So, you know, I wrote it and I paid like a friend of a friend who was like an English teacher or something to edit it. And I put it out there thinking I'd sell like 20 copies. Right. So, I mean, I started selling like 20 copies a day, a couple of days afterwards. This is no marketing. I just did it all myself and somebody picked it up and I published it. And like 2 weeks later, I was at hunting camp, and I didn't check it for like a week, and I came back, and it was selling 150 copies a day, 200 copies. It's just, you know, so it went up to the number four spot in the post-apocalyptic genre. I don't think they had survival preparedness genre back then. But anyways, so it did really well, and I think it resonated with people that could understand the kind of the human nature of it and the reality of it. So it's not going to win any Pulitzer Prizes. It's not going to win any, you know, best-selling, you know, I'm not going to win any awards in Tinseltown for the book. I did have it gone through again by a professional editor right after that. So I wrote that, and then I wrote the follow-up with the aftermath. And with the aftermath, I really wanted to paint the picture of, because a lot of people in their books, they have the military operating, you know, 6 months in, a year in, and like the military still flying around in helicopters and stuff, and they just don't understand the military's not there yet. So I wanted to paint the picture. So the book two, The Aftermath, picks up where book one leaves off, but it brings in a new main character, two main characters that are military, and it basically paints a picture how the country falls apart, how the government tries to deal with it, how the military responds. And then the third book kind of ties all that stuff in together. I introduce another character in book three, another kind of main character who's kind of a strange character that travels between towns and kind of carries messages between towns. And he's kind of an off-the-wall character. So the book, fiction book that I'm working on right now is actually based on that character. I go back to square one from day one and show what he lived through in the city, because I really want to beat that. I want to beat this into people's head that if you live in a major city and we have a long-term grid down situation happen, you, the chances of you surviving are very slim. So you're going to have to attach yourself to some warlord or some terrible group and do terrible things,
right?
Or you're going to just be hiding in a, you know, you're going to go, it's not going to go well. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, to your point, a good video. I just looked it up to make sure I knew the name of it. I recommend everyone watch this video. It was done years ago, but it's called 9 Mils from Anarchy. And this guy does research of historical facts when nations or communities, when they go with 9 Mils without 9 Mils in a row, all heck breaks loose.
That's right. He's absolutely right.
And he goes through situation after situation back in the history. And so when you say things like that, if you believe that the statement, you know, history always repeats itself, go look at that video. The guy shows you it's called 9 Mils from Anarchy. If you can still find it, I just know that that's the name of it. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's a great little flick. And he talks about, you know, all the nations that were falling and then 9 Mils. And then all of a sudden, boom, people got hungry and all heck broke loose.
That was the catalyst. That was the catalyst that caused me to write my first fiction book, was because the lack of understanding of how people are going to react without food. People don't, because we've never experienced that in this country. If you need food, you can get food. If you're hungry, there's a reason why you're hungry. You're living under a bridge. You've got you know, an addiction. You got this or that. There's some other issue going on that you're hungry, because if you need food in this country, we have food. The charity, right. Walk into any church and you're going to get some food, right? So this idea is people don't understand the psychological effects of being starved.
Right.
And I cannot, it's something that I haven't even been able to really get through to the preparedness community, because I'm drowned out by 1,000 other voices to one, or two. I'll add you to it because I know you're on board with me. But you take away people's food, and I'm not talking about for 2 or 3 days, but I'm talking about when people run out of food, and that's the thing. So everybody wants to make these groups in town, right? And you know, and they're not prepared really, or one person takes it serious and one person has food. And well, if you join up with a group, you're this big prepper guy, and I'm going to get all the people on my cul-de-sac and we're going to set up security perimeter. We're going to start gardening. We're going to do all this. Whose food do you think they're eating? You know, exactly. That 1 year food supply that you have, they're going to figure out real fast that you're only one not tightening your belt a notch every couple days, right? They're going to come for your food, and your food is going to last the group 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe. Right. So once the food is gone, the things that the mind trick, the things that happen to your brain, people don't understand.
Right.
So this, you can't trust anybody. So I use the analogy, and so for people with kids out there will understand this. If you're young, single, or if you don't have any children, you may not get it. But I try to use analogy, like for those of you with kids, like picture your kid, if you have a young child, you know, a three-year-old, or picture your kid when he was 3 years old, a little infant there. They're all gray. They're gaunt. You, as a parent, have failed. You haven't been able to find any food the last mm-hmm. week or 2 weeks. Your child is dying. They don't have any body fat left. They look like a skeleton. They're laying on the couch dying. Right. What would you not do, the average Joe, to get food for that child? You may beg, you may plead, you may fight, but I guarantee you a large percentage of people are going to at some point check their morality at the door to do whatever it takes to get food for that child, or for your wife, or for your husband, or, you know, your ailing father or mother. Right. You know, the humanity, we will be living in Viking culture. It is the man with the biggest axe on the block that's going to.
And you need to be away from people. That is.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, there's another side where people will go and they'll try and build a fortress somewhere. So I've seen people try to fortify places in town. They put bunkers in town and suburbia, which, again, you have to come up for air sometime. And you didn't get a 100-foot Atlas bunker buried in your backyard in suburbia without your neighbors knowing. I guarantee you didn't.
Right.
They saw thing coming down. They saw it being buried. You know, they're coming for you, and those things aren't impervious. You know, they can get in.
And there's a good show. I think it's The Twilight Zone called The Cellar or something.
Yeah, it's from the 50s or 60s or something, right? Yeah. And that's a perfect example. Yeah, they're just they're going to get in, right?
Yep.
At some point. I believe in living to fight another day. I mean, when I build a survival retreat, it has the latest technology, whiz-bang security. There's all kinds of secret stuff that I do with my buildings. It looks like a normal building. It looks like a normal cabin, or it looks like a normal lodge, or it looks like some of my newer ones in the area in northeastern United States here. We're like one of my newest things is to build what looks like a barn from the outside, doors shut. So basically anywhere you have a window or a door, there's a like a man door that closes over top of it. Big bay, you know, floor to vaulted ceiling, bay windows with barn doors that close up. So when you close it up, it looks like a barn from the outdoor. Right. And then when you open it all up, it's a nice timber frame house on the inside. So I always want things to blend in. And the other thing I see people always building their bunker under their house or trying to hide their food in the four walls of their house. That's another thing I'm very adamant about. Don't, because what happens is then people believe they have to die for their house. Because if your food's in the basement, you know, that big looting force of 40 people coming down your driveway, you have to fight them, because if you run out the back door and run away, they're going to take all your food and you're going to starve to death and you're going to die. So
right.
My opinion is you know, dealing with little threats, we're going to deal with little local threats. But if there's a large group coming for any of my retreats, they're getting out a tunnel out the back corner of the property, unlocking the front door, let them come in, let them take whatever they want from the house, because we only have 3 or 4% of our food in there. Let them take whatever they want. Yep. And then live to fight another day. Don't, you know, this. Anyways,
the gunfight thing is. Brother, because I've been preaching that, man. Let them have your retreat, then come back and take it one person at a time over time.
Yep.
And you can get it back, but strategically, but don't die. Don't let your kid die, your wife die, your brother die, protecting your food. Why would you have your food in there? You only have like 2-10% of your food there, and the rest is stored or cached somewhere that can't be found.
That's right. That's exactly right. That is a huge point. I mean, that it really is a very important point. And the other thing is, you don't have to buy a $100,000 bunker to keep your food in. Okay. So, I mean, buy a shed from, you know, one of these shed companies, get a 12 by 20 shed for your house. You put your rabbits in there, put your chickens in there, gardening shed, whatever you want to use it for, and put a basement under it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to look for a basement under a shed. I mean, you have to pour a concrete pad over top of it. It has to look from the outside like a shed sitting on a concrete pad.
Right.
But if you have a hidden entrance down in there, nobody's looking for hidden bunkers under sheds typically, right? And out in the country. So so I'm saying you could do things on a budget instead of, you know, because some people think that things are like really out of reach out them. And I will say one other thing. If there's another kind of misnomer of kind of prepping on a budget too. Okay. Mm-hmm. So people really want to, you know, reinforce this idea that, hey, you can do this on no money. I'm telling you, you can't. If you can't afford to spend $5,000 for a year's worth of, you know, freeze dried food, if you can't, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you better try and join a group because, spending the next 15 years on $100 a month to set up a off-grid survival retreat, you're not going to get very far. So,
I tell people in that circumstance, you better be skills and food. Skills are huge, but gun skills is a common denominator.
Yep.
Don't let that be your skill.
Yeah. Everybody in this industry has that. And, you know, I'm wearing a class that I took right here. I mean, this is one of the Three Rivers Tactical Training is one of the classes I took. I didn't even realize I was wearing that. So I can't stress enough to have the proper tactical training, but that's not going to get you into a group. You better have a marketable skill outside of that, because that's not hard to teach somebody on the fly either. So, and the other thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is if you're going to go that route and join an outside group, you're living by their rules and you may not like the rules 3 months in. Okay. Right. So it's not a catch all. It's not easy. I think what you're doing is great, with PrepperNet. And so people know each other beforehand, but I'm going to throw in there, you can't trust anybody. They might be your best friend. You might, you know, be letting them borrow tools and mowers and be building your prepper plans together for years. And you've put all kinds of, you put your money where your mouth is. You bought the long-term food and they talk a big game, but they didn't really do I see it all the time. And they didn't really do what they say they were doing. Mm-hmm. And you didn't verify it. And they're just making plans. They're going to be eating your food and you're going to be in the ditch in the back. So
that's why my group's been together for 20 years. We do a thing called trust but verify.
So that's right.
Anything that you're supposed to buy, you're supposed to buy things for your home and for the retreat. Every single thing is verified and marked and then placed by the group. And so, it's trust but verify.
That's one of the hardest things. I mean, I've sent so many people to your website. That's something that's very difficult, because a lot of the people that I build retreats for, they're a high net worth family and they run into like the limousine liberal crowds and they can't talk about any of this stuff to their friends and the people that they know. So they have a hard time connecting with, you know, us peons down here. You know, they need somebody here. They need somebody that can garden, but they don't know anybody that gardens or that's mechanically inclined or that with medical, right? So so I've sent a lot of people to you, but I mean, when they do that, we put them through the rigor. I'm like, set up a fake email account, use fake names, be Carlos Mencia, you know, meet people multiple times, get to know them. You know, it's an exciting thing and people have a hard time, you know, not talking about,
right,
the things that they've, all the high speed stuff you want to impress people. Keep your stuff private. Don't be sharing what you're doing with other people. You know, don't be telling people what you're doing. So
here's one of the things that I talk about often is, why don't survival, I think you'll agree with me. I don't know. So we'll see. I think being in a group is your most important prep. Being with a team of people is more important than anything else that you can do. I say that. Let me tell you why I say that. If you have a chance to be by yourself or be in a group of Navy, you could be by yourself with every skill in the world or be in a group of highly trained Delta Force or Navy SEALs. Which would you choose to be a part of?
I would have to ask you a caveat.
Okay.
Where? So if you're talking about if I'm teaming up with a team of Navy SEALs in downtown Dallas, or you're even suburbia or like
in a group, like a survival group or retreat.
I know.
You hear me out. But if you're talking about, so I would rather be with a very tiny two family unit that's tucked away, you know,
that's
20 miles from the nearest small town over a ridge, hidden driveway, you know, no neighbors, surrounded by thousands of acres of forest land and farms. I'd rather be in that situation with a smaller group than I would with a bigger group with more skills and a doctor and in a worse location. So location is very key. So I do agree with you that getting a group together is very important. This is very hard. We don't have, even if you've bought, you know, back to the basics and, you know, you read Mother Earth news, you don't have the life skills that the people that crossed the Great Divide did.
Right.
You don't have the life skill. You don't. You think you may think you do because you got 1,000% more than the guy next to you.
Because you know how to can. You don't know how to
feel. You don't. And I'm telling you right now, you don't. So you don't have the skills that you think you do. It's going to be a very dramatic, you know, you can't just run down to Tractor Supply and buy some spray to kill the bugs that are infecting your crops that you have to live off of next year, right? There's so many variables that you can't adjust for. So having somebody that's proficient and you know, spreading that knowledge base around is really important, which is why what you're doing is great. But from my side, I would stress it. You got to get away from people. You got to get tucked away somewhere for the first year till the people are dying off. We're not just hiding. We're not just hiding our light under a basket. We're surviving for the first year, and then we're going to bring our heads up above water, look around, who's still surviving out here, start working together, building a community, you know, getting back to where we are. So
I love it. Exactly what you're saying. People are, you know, people always talk about, you know, growing food. Can you grow food? I'm like, or do you have at your retreat? They asked me, do you have a garden? I'm like, no, we don't have a garden. We're not going to be growing food. We're going to be hiding for the first year. After the first year, you guys can go pick any house you want because 90% of them are not occupied anymore because the people died in it. You go get your garden. I mean, so, and also I tell people, I was doing a speech or talking in front of I'll go ahead and say it, Asheville, North Carolina. And a lot of people do these homesteads. And I said, I put a photo on the screen. I said, you guys know what this is? And people are like, homestead, a farm. And I'm like, no, that's tomorrow's supermarket. Because everyone within 5 miles know you have cows and you don't have the firepower. You need the 82nd Airborne to keep these people from killing your food.
Yeah.
And they think they're going to stay there on their little farms, you know, 8 miles outside of Asheville. Yeah. With their chickens and their cows and everything, and that's where they're gonna bug out to and stay.
So and that you talked about, I think it was chapter 5 in my book where I talked about how hard it would be just to get water, just to procure water and boil water in an environment. At any given point in time, there could be some guy hidden in a bush 100 yards away that's been watching you for 2 days. You didn't even know it. You know, you can't win the fight. You can't win that fight if you are visible and if you're running a fruit stand or a vegetable stand, you're selling your goods and you've got cows and people know you have food and that type of stuff. You're right. So that is kind of the Mother Earth news side of the preparedness industry where, you know, we don't agree with guns. We got the super soakers with pepper spray in them. Okay. Yeah. That's going to work out real well for you. You know, the share and I mean, okay. So I want to be careful what I'm saying, but you can't be visible from a road. I mean, that's number one. There's 100 points on a checklist that I go through when I do a retreat analysis. And there's just on the location side of it, there's 100 things that I look for, so many things to go through. And that's the problem. I think a lot of people, so I talked about the biggest things I see with survival retreats. Number one is almost nobody's got enough food. Everybody has $100,000 worth of guns, and they got $4,000 worth of food. And I always ask them on the phone, have you count? Do you have a spreadsheet with the actual caloric count of the food that you have stored? Well, you know, yeah, you know, we know we've got a year's, we've got 14 months. And I get there, and they bought, you know, 2 1-year wise plant. Okay, I'm not going to say any names here, but they bought these 1-year food packages, which actually only have about 4 months worth of food in them. If you get nothing else out of this, you have to have a spreadsheet based on the caloric needs of each individual person in your group. And you need to know how many calories are, you know, they're 3 servings a day. On average, almost every one of those long-term food companies give you about 800 calories a day. That, which is 2/3 of that Minnesota starvation experience. Okay. So food. And then the second thing is location. I mean, I've had clients that have spent multi-millions of dollars at retreat properties that I can see the freaking thing from the road, or that, you know, it's on a lake and there's 70 other cabins on the edge of that, that lake. I mean, I've had clients that have sold their properties after getting, and it's something I hate to do, like to write. And I'm not telling you to sell your property that you put all this blood, sweat, and tears in, but you're right here. Everybody knows you're right here. You know, you got to get tucked away somewhere. So again, that goes to, goes back and forth between the idea of building the fortress mentality. I also believe on these people that are building like things that look like castles. You know, if you build a moat with alligators, if you build the Alamo, it's going to end the same way. There's going to be a bigger group at some point that's going to come and take your Alamo, and they're going to live there and eat your food.
Yeah. So you got to be, and so that causes a problem for a lot of people. And I'm going to share something. We haven't talked about this, but one of the ideas, because one of the biggest things that the people in PrepperNet go, well, I've got a group now. We've started it. We've got 2 people or 6 people, but we don't have a retreat. What do we do? So here's something that I've told people to do. And hey, you can shoot it down if you want to. I know that I can go on, is it RBO, whatever it is, where the rental homes, and you can scout ahead of time some of the most exclusive, out in the middle of nowhere homes that you can rent for the weekend.
Did you get into my computer and read Survival Theory 2?
No, I've been preaching this for years, brother.
Okay.
I have. So, and you can look every single day to see if someone's in that house or not. You can store your food in a building or whatever. And you can be nice to the homeowners. If the crap hits the fan, you go online. If you can go online, you make reservations, you pay, and you go there. If the owners show up 4 months later, you better have enough food for them. And you say, hey, listen, we love you guys. Thank you for coming. Man, we've been protecting your property, and we have food for you. Do you guys want us to leave, or do you want us to take all our food? They're going to say, no, can you stay and protect us?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. So you said RBO. Are you talking about like bed and breakfasts?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah, like, that's one of the – so I have a list of strategies for people that are on a budget. So first of all, this is not a survival retreat. So people are like, oh, that's terrible. I'm like, no, what's terrible is staying in your house in suburbia, thinking that's going to keep you safe because you've always been safe in that house. Like the idea of leaving your home – people are like, oh, and so they try and use a straw man and say, well, if I leave my home, it's terrible to be out on the open road. And like, I'm not telling you to do that either. You know, that's the worst idea too. But so have a place to go. So the question is, I'm on a budget. I've got no money. I've got enough money for food and some seed and a bug out bag and some rifle. So again, if you ain't got no money, you're going to be up the creek here. But so one of the strategies is for the blue collar guy is, bed and breakfasts, rent there, go there a couple times a year, build a rapport with them. I've had clients that are in certain areas that I've had them go to 5 or 6 different bed and breakfasts. It's funny you mentioned it, cause I've actually done this with, you know, clients that are on the lower scale that can't afford to do some of the things that I do with the other guys. And I'll have them go there and build a rapport. And once you get one that clicks that, you know, it takes a lot of research, finding one that's not on a main road, that's kind of tucked away from satellite view when you're reconning them, see if they have the garden in the backside. You know, we found one out there. Well, I'm not gonna say where, but I mean, they raised their own chickens. They did their own breakfasts, you know, with their own eggs and their garden, they canned. And I'm like, their website. I'm like, okay, these are people that have life skills that this other client didn't have. I'm like, you need to. So that's one way. Rental cabins, that's not as good, but the same thing. And I tell people, you're not stealing somebody's cabin. If they show up, you better have enough. Just like you said, we work together with them, you know, when they show up. Here's another one. The first one I would say is if you have an Uncle Charlie that has a farm somewhere in suburb, you know, outside the city, if you know somebody that you know, preferably a relative, that's step one. The step you mentioned, rental cabins. So Zillow, okay? You can go on Zillow right now, go to the area that's two hours from your house, the area that you would buy us, think, and look for $1 million homes, you know, $2 million homes on 400 acres, and look, and is there furniture in there? Are people living in there? Or is that some, like, mansion that is for sale, right? You need to kind of scout them out a little bit. Find like three locations. I wouldn't have one. Wouldn't put all my eggs in one basket. Find three or four locations and then check it once every 2 weeks. See if those houses sold. Find some new ones. Find some vacant properties that fit your, like the survival retreat that you can't afford to buy, that's sitting out there vacant, right? That's sitting there waiting to sell, right? And that's a process you're going to have to do every month, and you're going to have to swap them out. But it doesn't cost any money. And right. Again, I'm not advocating that you hijack, you steal somebody's house, you kill them.
You protect it for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you have the life skills, if you have the food and the equipment, you should be able to explain that and join forces with them.
So let me rationalize this for people that have a hard time with this. So what I would do is a thing called social engineering, and I've done this. And I would go and I would stay at a bed and breakfast and go, okay, this is out in the middle of nowhere. And then I just imagine, I'm not saying I did this, but just imagine if you did this and all of a sudden you cause a leak that's leaking, or a pipe to leak. You call the people and go, hey, you've got a leaky pipe here. Do you guys want to come fix it? They may say, oh, well, we have a guy that lives up there. We live in Florida. We have a guy that's up there that every now and then will go up there and do some maintenance work for you. Oh, my gosh. That's a lot of intel right there that you just learned. That first of all, the homeowners live in Florida. They have a handyman that may be coming if something happens. Gives you intel if you want to use that as a retreat. And you go down, and so you stay there a couple times, and you go, okay, this is a great place. You store enough food. Now, if you're going to do this, one thing, you can pay for the rent to go and stay there until all the society craps or whatever. You can also store your belongings in different
places. That's the other side of it. So with this strategy, when you find that location, put your stuff in a storage unit in that area.
Yeah.
And so that's another issue I see where people, they have most of the preppers I know, they have all their stuff in their house. I'm like, well, what happens if you're deadlocked in traffic or your vehicle doesn't run? You know, that's going to be a very bad scenario because nobody's going to want to leave all that stuff in their basement. Right. So my recommendation is always whatever area you plan on bugging out to, Get a climate controlled storage unit and keep your stuff in that area when the time comes. So I've got clients that actually have done this strategy. I've got guys, truck drivers that have stationed stuff in different areas of the country because they drive long home. So, right. Yeah.
And with that, what I beg you to do is have at least enough food for that family if they come to feed them for a year. That's the least you can do if you're going to use their property.
That's right.
And you need to have extra food anyway, but just assume that they may bring their family and get there at some point. You have enough food for them. It doesn't hurt your group. And then boom, you've got a survival retreat. It's called an instant survival retreat, but you have to monitor that almost daily. I mean, you can always, and you go and stay to these different ones, and you can look at the satellite images. You can go up there and rent it and walk around. Trust me, that's for someone that doesn't have money. That is a great solution.
I want to throw one thing out here. Okay. It's still a terrible solution. Okay?
Oh, it is.
That's
the worst, best. Yeah. Yeah.
We're pitching this if you have no other if you have no other availability and you can't afford it. If you're just being lazy and you're figuring, I'm going to go take that guy's hoofs over, well, I'm not rolling with you at all.
It could be money. Yeah. It could be money.
But that's what I'm saying. So if you don't have any other option, that's fine. But these aren't good options. So I don't want to go down the road and say, oh, yeah, just do that. It's easy. These are still – there's a lot of bumps in the roads with this strategy too. So you just have to be careful. Use your best judgment, but don't it's kind of the urban prepping, you know, the gray man philosophy in the suburbia and the towns, you know, throw some trash in your front yard, spray paint your front door, put a large 6-foot privacy fence in your backyard so nobody can see you gardening. I'm like, you're not fooling anybody. You're really not fooling your neighbors. They're going to know what's going on when when they're hungry and everybody's peeking at everybody at all the time, 24/7, you're not hiding your presence and what you got going on.
And trust me, I'm a prepper. I live in, I think it's 26 miles from downtown Charlotte. It's not far enough out. This is not my bug out place. Trust me.
Right.
But I've done surveillance on everything around me. I've looked at Google Maps from Google Earth. I know I've even started maybe, tracking on a map like I did in my old neighborhood to see who my neighbors are. But there's going to be a lot of people dead at my house. And the reason is because I have talked to a couple of my neighbors and they know I've tried to put together some survival things, not for me to stay here, but just for small emergencies or like disasters that could happen that we could team together where it doesn't take a whole bug out. And I see where their mindset is. And they know that I probably have some goods here. I do. I have 3 months worth of food here. I don't have any more than 3 months because I want my life to depend on getting to either our primary bug out location or our secondary. I want my life to depend on that. That's why we only have 3 months here.
Yeah.
Because if I had a year, I might say, it's not so bad yet. Let me just stay here. We don't want that as an option.
Absolutely. So that's another big issue that I see is, this is very common in the preparedness community is, stay at home, just ride it out till it gets bad and then leave. That's the worst time to be traveling is once it gets that bad that you're unsafe in your house. The last place you want to be is on the open road during the day or at night. With my clients, I say you got 3 days. Typically don't say leave on day one because read the book to find out. But, I usually tell people to leave the night of the second day. It gives you time to gather things, get together, get out of town the first day or two. Some people are like, you got to leave in the first 4 hours of the city. Like, people are shooting people walking down the road. They're going to look at you funny if you're pushing, a wagon full of goods. They're going to be like, what are you doing? It's not until people miss those nine or 12 meals that you talked about where people are going to start getting dangerous. And even then, it's going to take some time to fall apart. It's going to fall apart fast. Don't get me wrong. But you have to be at your retreat before things fall apart. And you got to get out soon. If you try and ride it out till it gets that bad, you're never going to make it to where you need to go.
That's where I say we're brothers from a different, because we think the same. And I've been telling people, and people can, even at prepper camp for 5 years, I tell them, hey, America, we're so dependent on the government as a whole. And we think we can, we're such optimists, we can get through anything. And I tell people all the time, if a nuclear bomb hits Chicago, LA, and Dallas, 99.99% of the people in America will go to work tomorrow because one, they think we can do this as America and get through this.
Yeah.
Two, they need the paycheck and they don't want to get fired. But that gives us preppers time to go, okay, you know what? On my way out, first I'm going to get a U-Haul and then I'm going to go by and get a nice juicy steak. Right. And then I can get my stuff packed and go to my retreat. Mm-hmm. We will have that much time, except in maybe like a financial collapse or even a pandemic could get that. But part of people in my group bugged out in a pandemic because they have kids at risk.
Yeah, well, I have multiple clients that are still today living at the retreats from day one. They have the means to do so. But, you know, part of that is a pandemic is if you don't get out early, they may not let you out. They may shut the borders down in your town or your county or your state. So Johnson, you got to get out quick.
I don't know if you know this, but in North Carolina, when the pandemic hit, they actually shut down cities and communities where you couldn't go into them. So even if you had a house in this city, we'll call it City B, even if you had a house and owned property there, they wouldn't let you get there unless it was your primary residence.
Yep.
Even if you own property. Same with the Outer Banks of North Carolina. They would not let you go on the Outer Banks of North Carolina because there's one, you know, just a couple ways to get in and out, unless you were, that was your primary resident and you stayed there and it was on your driver's license. Yeah. They wouldn't even let you. That caused another problem for me when I was consulting with people going, oh my gosh, I never thought about that. If the bug out retreat is not in your name and it's not on your license. So that does cause a little twist that I've had to change some of my consulting with people.
Yeah, I've done well over 100 survival retreat analysis, and I've built quite a few as well. It's been a learning process for me too. So you know, I see what some of the top people in the country have done. So I would say that my advice today has definitely changed a good deal. Not the mentality behind my strategies hasn't changed at all. Right. But you know, I've seen some pretty high speed, some pretty cool tricks, and some pretty high speed stuff over the years. And so when I build a place now, I take all that knowledge and I put it in to the build. No idea where I was going with this point.
You're gonna
getting late. I spent a long time today hanging tree stands out in the woods. My brain's not firing. So
nice. Have you been actual hunting yet?
No. So I have been unbelievably busy. Let's just say I've been unbelievably busy. I can't. And if you've emailed me and I haven't responded, I'm really sorry. Jan, you know who you are. I'm going to respond to you soon. I promise. I feel bad. It's just been, overwhelmed with work. So,
and I want to tell everybody, go to his YouTube channel and you can listen to chapter 5 of this book. And it's read out and it's good, but you need to buy that book. I'm just telling you that book will change. It will take a lot of this, the prepper, you know, these stories, of communities coming together. And I mean, you get into lists too, which is great. I mean, things you need to do. The book just covers, it's like the perfect book. I'll just tell you, it's the perfect prepper preparedness book. It's really good. And, everyone needs to buy that. And you've got your book 2 is coming soon. So that's good. So let me ask you a question. Do you have any hope? Because it didn't sound like you did earlier, because this is one of my questions. Any hope that the government is going to do something?
No.
Now, we are someday, we're in a documentary that's going to be coming out, right?
Yes.
And that it's called the Black Sky Event. Have you heard anything about when it's going to come out or anything?
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming out. So David Womack, who's producing that, I speak with him fairly regularly. A great individual. This documentary is going to be it's going to be amazing. It keeps getting pushed back. It's going to be very well done. Let's just put it that way. It's going to be top notch. It's looking like January or February at this point.
Okay.
So I was trying to have it out before Christmas, but I mean, he's going through all the hoops with the legalese. It's not going to be a strung together YouTube video. So it's going to be very powerful and hard hitting. I am in the process of trying to get a documentary made right now, based on the psychology of it. So you asked me about hope, and I don't want to minimize the gravity of the situation, what I'm saying. And I'm trying to tell people the American electric grid is not going to be hardened, short of a miracle. Okay. at this point. So the EMP commission came out in 2004, 2008. They were put together in 2001. They spent years testing. They've been screaming from the rooftops since 2004 that 89% of people are going to, if this happens, they've been telling the government this is America's Achilles heel. The science is all there. There's no dispute. Russia's, I mean, it's a very, very serious and very real threat. And basically what happened is the electric utility industry just threw a ton of money at it. And they produce fake science through the EPRI report and the EEI, Electric Edison Institute, which is 30%. From my understanding, it's 30% voting members are from Chinese utility companies, which are owned by the Chinese government. I mean, there's a vested interest not to harden the grid in this country, right? Right. And so the scale of the problem is really big. So on the flip side of that, I think some in my industry that are warning and trying to get them to harden the grid, hey, we just need to do this and harden the high voltage transformers. We got to harden power plants. There's a lot more to it. And even if you did all that, the EMP hits, it's frying everything, right? But you have a fighting chance to get electricity back up and running to certain areas. You have a fighting chance. If we don't harden the high voltage transformers, which take 12 to 18 months to build, they come from Germany or South Korea. 12 to 18 months in normal times when resources are available. They only build about 12 to 20 a year. You send them an order for 3,000, say we need those tomorrow. You're not getting the first one for a year, right?
Right.
It's a very real threat. And sitting in at the EDTF, I recommend everybody go Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, EDTF-1 report, EDTF-2 report, and find out that the people at the top know this is a very real problem. The problem is legislatively, it's not going to go anywhere. So Trump had his executive order. If Biden gets in here, that's going out the window. Biden's already said he's getting rid of that executive order. So that's gone. You had the DHS, which is kicking the can down the road. They were just waiting for Trump to get out because they got other things they're working on. We had the National Defense, the NDAA, Authorization Act, which did have some funding in there for it for research. We have solutions for the problems. The problem is my personal opinion is the problem is that 99.9% of the American people are unaware that tomorrow we could lose the electric grid for an extended period of time and it would change life radically as you know it. So right. Basically, the politicians don't have to act because nobody even knows this is a real problem. It doesn't get on the news, right? You just don't hear about it, so they don't have to do anything. And electric utility companies keeps the palms greased enough where, you know, so the documentary is going to be great. I think it's going to raise a lot of eyebrows. The question is how far is his distribution? Can he get it? Okay. I'm trying to get a documentary put together on the psychology of this because nobody wants to fear monger, you know. Right. That's kind of, even in the military, all the meetings that we had, it was a no fear monger zone. Don't scare people, you know. We're just going to find solutions, and you know, they're only talking about the first 2 weeks, so it's a no fear monger. I think you need to scare people a little bit. I think you need to introduce Duko Bogovic to the world and wake people up to the reality of what this is going to be, and. So my opinion is, I'll break a little bit of news here, which I haven't really shared with anybody, but my opinion is the only way we're going to get this problem fixed is if you had a high-end a TV show based on this subject. So people have asked me where my books are. I actually wrote a TV show the last year and a half, and I had a lot of backers, and no guarantees it's going to get made, but there has been some progress on it. I think if you had a major Netflix series or Amazon Prime series, right, that was very dark, that was very not smut for the sake of smut, right? But you painted an accurate picture of what this would look like, okay? And how my show's set up is for the first 9 weeks, it's 9 episodes. Day one is episode one. And then episode two starts on day 7. Episode three starts on day 14. So all the characters interact and they weave in and out. And I'm going to be releasing the book on this too. But so you, over the course of those 9 weeks or those 9 episodes, you get 9 weeks of showing things falling apart. Right. And every week, okay, when you jump in, your characters are in a completely different psychological frame of mind, and things are happening. You're like, wait, what happened? And it's like a 2x4 every time you tune in each week. So that's the direction. I think if we can get that made, and if you could get the American people saying, wait, is this even real? Could right, this happen? And then they start calling their congressmen. We would have we're setting up websites to funnel people back to. So, you know, when they get back there. I think, what's the other guy? Chris Weatherman, or what's his American. Yeah, I think he's got a TV show that they're looking to make a TV show of his. Yep. And in my opinion, is more the merrier. If we get 1 second after, you know, trying to get William Fortune, somebody bought the rights to that, but they're just sitting on them. So it's a tough thing to have happen, but if we can get some TV shows made on this, and the American people, the majority of the American people, not the preparedness people, wake up to this threat, then we might get somewhere with it.
I do want to say that on your website, you have a ton of research on there that people can go and read some research that you've provided for people on the grid and everything, haven't you?
I have, and full disclosure, that information is about 2 years old. It's all still relevant. All of it's still accurate. And I had somebody go through here, my assistant go through and, you know, try and update the links. So there were some dead links, but I think they're all fixed. If they're not, shoot me an email. But there's a lot of reports on there, but I'll be blunt. Being a part of that 3-day wargaming operation with, you know, I mean, everybody was there. The NSA, the CIA, the Pentagon was there, DOD, DOE. You had the testing labs there. The electric utility guys were there. It was everybody. But going through that process and finding out that the backup generators at the nuclear sites haven't even been EMP tested. I mean, I could have a list of stuff where my jaw just keeps hitting the floor. Like, this is insane. Like,
right.
Because from the first year, there was basically they didn't have any food or any supplies for the people that were running the nuclear facilities. And I was like, it's like, hold up. You gotta have food and supplies there. So at the second one, they were like, well, we got, you know, a week's worth of food there, and we have some cots and some stuff, but it's just for the employees. And it's like, well, wait. How long do you think that employee, he's watching the city over there burn and on fire where his wife and kids are. How long do you think he's going to stay there? I was like, you got to have enough food and water and supplies to bring their immediate family in, or they're not going to stay there and keep pushing the buttons and turning the switches, right?
Yeah.
You got to have enough to bring their family in. They're like, well, we can't get clearances on teenagers and, you know, top secret clearances for the wife. It would be a hassle. I'm like, well, don't expect your employees to stay there. They might stay there for a day or two, 3 days tops. But at some point, you're going to have a nuclear facility that's just running rogue.
They're going to do an auto shutdown and they're going to walk home.
Yeah. But there's no guarantee that the pumps are going to work because the backup generators have never been tested, which is insane.
Friend of mine just texted me and said they need to rekindle Jericho. Did you ever watch
the series? That's an old one. That's an old one. The other thing is the backup generators, they've got 7 days of backup fuel on site. 7 days. And they have a civilian contractor resupply. Oh, yeah. Do you think that diesel tanker from you know, the Gulf of Mexico down there in Texas is going to ever make it to – you know, you might get one or two up there to resupply, but eventually – they're not going to be able to keep those pumps running. So that's another problem. So make sure you're not within 50 miles of a nuclear facility. Make sure your prevailing winds, you know where you're building your retreat at.
Exactly. Absolutely. And so in the Southeast, you're screwed because we have so many nuclear plants on the East Coast. It's just crazy. It's very few places that you can go. I actually
Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia, in my opinion, are the greatest states in the continental United States for prepping. People think, well, you're crazy. You're on the East Coast. Well, you know, everybody wants to run to Bonner's Ferry, Idaho. Okay. I've got clients there. Everybody. Yeah, you're right. Everybody's a prepper, but 90% of the preppers that live there aren't prepared as far as they should be. Okay. Right. But now you got a whole bunch of people that, and they all got $100,000 worth of guns. We already covered that. They've all had a tactical training, and they're all running out of food, and you're the last prepper group with food. Guess whose food they're going to end up eating? And they're well-trained, and they know who their neighbors are. You know what I mean? And it's hard, the harsh winters. It's hard to grow potatoes. Everybody wants to go to the Great Redoubt, you know, out there in Montana and Idaho. I don't think that's the best place for prepping. Alaska's really tough. I think West Virginia, they got black soil, rolling hills. You can get tucked away in West Virginia. Ain't nobody going to find you. There's areas there. So my retreat
is on the shores of Miami, Florida. That's where I go.
You're going.
Everyone wants to know where my retreat is. And I say it's in Miami. And they go, what? They look at me weird. But I agree with you. And so, you know, I do have something that I need to probably share with you on a offline is that I've got software that will map a lot of stuff on the Google Earth, meaning nuclear plants, hospitals, military bases, known gangs, and all. And
that makes my life easier. I got to look for all that. I got to look for all that stuff individually when I do an analysis. So,
What is it? Oh, it maps prisons as well. Mm-hmm. It maps every bad thing you can think of. I put the data into this map, and I use it mostly for my consulting. And mostly they pay me for that because they look at that and they go, wow, okay, I see why I don't want my retreat here or here. And one of the things that I'm going to start doing is taking – now, don't you think I'm getting political, but I am. I'm going to start taking the voter count of the counties, the red and blue counties, and put that, overlay that in there so you can kind of see what the majority of people percentage wise in that county is. I'm not saying that if you're in a county that has 90% people that voted for Biden, I'm not saying they're all liberal, you know, crazy nuts, but if they have if a county has, you know, 95% Trumpers, I'm not saying they're all preppers either, but it gives you an idea of what the overall thinking in the area is. So it's a very powerful. I've showed that.
You know what? You know what, Forrest? If I could have my pick, I would want to be in a very rural area with 90% Biden voters because, you know, you're probably one of the few people with a gun.
Yeah, right. True. And you can go, boom.
Those rural counties usually don't go Biden, though, either.
Yeah. And so, but that's a software that I use. And, I used to sell it by a snapshot, but it's been hard to do. I mean, I just haven't had time. So, I've asked, you've covered all the questions. Oh, wait. No, there was another question I had. Oh, I talked about your research. So new projects is you're finishing a book called Survival Theory 2. It's 7 years in the making. Just kidding.
Is that 7 years ago?
I don't know when it happened, but it's a great book. I don't know, but I'm just giving you a hard time because I want your next book out.
I think it was 4 years ago, wasn't it?
I don't even know. But
I wrote it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm waiting for your next one, and I mean, good luck on your show. That would be awesome. I mean, a lot of people say that I'm a pretty good actor, so just throwing that out there.
All right, we need plenty of people to shoot.
Oh, wait, no, that's not. But so tell us the next 6 months, what's your plans, what you're doing, what you're driving. Now, you know, you're driving to get the grid hardened, but just tell us, you know, what you're doing, what, and yeah.
Yeah, we're getting the grid hard at this point because all the big organizations that were fighting to get the grid hardened, they've almost all gone out of business at this point.
Okay.
Or, you know, they were all 501c3s, but there's no money because nobody knows it's a problem. You know, when Trump did the executive order, everyone's like, oh, yay, there's an executive order. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything yet. You know, and everybody was excited about it. All it did is it turned an issue that wasn't political at all, turned it political now, because now that's one of Trump's pet projects. So now that the other administration is coming in, they're not going to have anything to do with that, right?
Wait, now I watched a press conference today. That new administration might not be coming in.
We might have to place a wager on that.
Yeah.
See, the problem,
there's a little hope. A little hope.
I don't. And that's fine. And I would love that. I would love four more years. I would love 4 more years.
But it's not.
I think, you know, something we didn't talk about is I think you underestimate the power of the media and the social media algorithms to just not let, even if the information, look at the information about Hunter Biden, that just, they just didn't let it. It was not permitted to be let out of the bag before the election. So it was hidden. So, if you get nothing else, we are living in a post-truth world. And everybody always asks me, what you can't trust any of them. Fox News, Newsmax, CNN, I don't trust them. They all have an agenda. No one's telling the truth anymore. They're all getting their marching orders from either the DNC or the RNC. It's just everybody's sold out. It's sad, man, but it's hard to know which way's up and down. And we're living in a society now where I'm not even going to go there, but just there is no truth. And the things that we would hold as just like science and truth. And hey, well, this is, you know, a boy is a boy and a girl is a girl. You know, that's just when you start losing just normal things like that and the rest of society and the rest of the culture just jumps on board, we're living in like an alternate universe. So it's going to get way harder going forward. If you're on, you know, preppers, get off Facebook. Don't talk about this stuff. Don't be using terms like boogaloo. Don't be talking about taking over the government. Keep your stuff to yourself. Stop putting all your stuff out there and, you know, telling the world, because it may come back to bite you at some point. Okay, I realize people are frustrated with what's going on in the government and the world, but, you know, stay sane. So I would like to plug, I have a Patreon account. So, again, Facebook and YouTube, I mean, I think one of our videos, they flagged when we were talking about COVID, they flagged one of our videos that we did before for COVID. I just, you know, I don't have any faith that YouTube and Facebook and these places are going to be friendly faces. I mean, you've moved to MeWe and, you know,
I'm moving off YouTube as soon as I can find a platform to stream on that's reliable.
So I'm on Patreon right now, which is, again, probably going to go the way of the dodo bird as well. But for right now, I give, I stay in front of people. I do live Q&As there. I give regular updates as to what's going on in the world, what you're not hearing in the media, the stories. And I kind of have access to the people that are putting the information out, but kind of before it gets there. So if you want to follow me on Patreon, check me out there and support me.
Yep, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I recommend all our users, because he is an activist, even though he's saying there's not much hope when it comes to the grid. And you know, one of the things I read about you talked about the Transformers. I read an article, and I know you probably can verify this, that we don't even have the materials in America to make these.
Nope.
To make them.
Neither does South Korea or Germany. That's one of the problems of 12 to 18 months. The materials they need take a long time to resource to get there. Right. And so when you read, if you can go to the I'll try to remember which report. I've read so many government reports, but there's a electric industry report basically that talks about how the transformers are bought and constructed and everything. They were saying 12 to 18 months on the good side.
Right.
You know? So. Right.
So, yep. Hey, and also, and you know what? You might not be interested in this book if you don't know who, if you're not a Christian. I know Jonathan and I are both Christians. We've talked about it a lot of times. But this book here, it will help you kind of understand what we're getting ready to go through, because it's going to get worse. The Bible tells us it's going to get worse, and it kind of gets you through that. That's why the name of it is Stand Firm to the End. And I literally think it's at either $5.99 or $6.99. That means I make like a $2. It's not for the money. If you can't afford it, email me and I'll send you a copy of it. But what it does, it goes through the Bible and takes about, because we're in what we call the end of days in the Bible. That's the area of time that we are in the Bible. And we know what's going to happen. They've told us, and it's coming to pass. So it can help you with your family and I think, and I think Jonathan will back me, is you can have all the food in the world, you can have the best retreat, but if you don't know where you're going when you die, it's all in vain.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about a lot of scary stuff today. I'm not the rosiest guy to have on here, because I paint a pretty bleak picture, and I don't give a lot of hope. And I do recommend people buy Beans and Bullets. But with all that said, none of that matters, when the time comes. When you're standing at those gates, do you want to hear "Well done, good and faithful slave," or do you want to hear "I never knew you, you who practice lawlessness"? So that's very important. So if you are Christians, though, it's very you can't live your lives in fear, right? Right. So people ask me, like, how do you deal with this? I'm like, I go home. When I go home and I spend time with my kids, we play board games every night. I'm not worried. I know where I'm going. So while it's important to focus on prepping and preparedness and, being able to feed your wife and kids when the time comes, you gotta focus on the other stuff. None of that stuff matters. You can't live your life in fear. At the end of the day, yep, His will be done, and you can have the best laid plans, and they can get derailed on step number one. Okay. So you have to have the faith to go with the action.
Just the other day, I had breakfast with a friend, and he goes, "Well, Forrest, you're just kind of paranoid, and do you live your life in fear?" I open my door, I grab my AR-15. I'm like, I'm not scared of anything. I am prepared. And so that's a difference. When actual crap happens, you will be afraid to death. I will have the tools, the trade, and the skill where I won't be in fear. Now, and it's the mindset. Exactly. Yes. So, hey, Jonathan, again, one of my favorite people, even having on, because you preach it and you give the truth and you hit it hard, but you understand the mindset, you understand the spiritual aspect. Tell people, we know about Patreon. Tell people how they can get up. Because we have people that follow us that are worth at least tens of thousands of dollars. Maybe some millionaires. I'm just kidding. Maybe some millionaires. I know there are some on here. But how can they get in touch with you? How can they follow you? How can they support you? Tell us more. If there's a Patreon, how they find you on that. And then.
As far as my books, you can buy them at like Barnes & Noble stuff too. But Amazon, all my books are available on Audible. Survival Theory and the Fiction books are there on Audible. They're an ebook. They're Apple iBook or whatever. So they're available in any format you want. So that's where you'd go for my books. My website is griddownconsulting.com. That's griddownconsulting.com. In full disclosure, I am not taking any new clients at this point. I've reached critical mass, and for me to do the job that I need to do for the people that I need to do it for, I can't take any new clients. So unfortunately, I may in the future at some point. So feel free to email me, but right now I'm not taking any new clients. But there is information, there's research there, there's information on more information on my books, there's information on my bio, like my background. That's another thing. A lot of people listen to some of the top prepper experts. The first thing I want to know is, where does this guy come from? Why does he get to say what he gets to say, and why should I listen to him? And sometimes I go read bios, I'm like, dear gracious, like that's your bio? Like, what's your background? What gives you the right to tell me to do this or that? So some of the top YouTube channels, or I shouldn't say top, but some of these big YouTube guys, I'm like, they're kind of nutty. And so be careful who you're listening to and who you're getting your advice from, guys. Right. You can find me on Facebook. I'll be honest with you. I have a social media manager. I send stuff through her just because I'm so busy. But there is stuff that gets sent through Facebook. I have a YouTube channel. And Instagram, at Grid Down Prepper. You can find me on Instagram.
Awesome. I think I need to get some kickbacks, because I've been pushing your book now for like 2.5 years.
You probably should at this point.
And it's just one of my favorites. It just is. And so, hey, well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for taking time out from your family. The men are hunting and, and coming on, finding a place beside the road and, you know, and calling in and being on the show. And thanks for sharing everything that you have. And I'm sure our people, I think they enjoyed it for the fact that you're not all rosy and you're real. And a lot of people I saw realistic, real in the chat. So everyone, this video will stay up on YouTube until they cut us off. We are moving to a new platform. I'm actually looking at three different platforms, but I've got to find one I can stream to. So it may be that we stream to YouTube and then take all the stuff off there. I don't know yet. We're looking at, is it something stream, live stream as well? So, we're looking to move. Give us some time, but look for us on MeWe, and I'm going to release my book on Black Friday, and it's a brand new book, and I need everyone to buy it. I just need you to buy it so I can buy food and Christmas gifts for my kids. I'm kidding, but I do want you guys to have it. It's 2.5 years of work, and then a big announcement, I think, when it comes to PrepperNet and some of the things that we'll be doing for our members, that's coming out December 1st. But Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again.
Yes. And call me anytime and I'm sure we'll talk, and God bless you and thanks. And we appreciate it.
See you next time around.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.